They're a series of books that I've enjoyed over the last bunch of years, written by two authors, Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner. I don't know if anyone's familiar with their books. They're two economists who write these very interesting books and show you different ways to... Their first book, Freakonomics, was like a groundbreaking book, a new way to look at things. And their most recent book from 2014, the beginning of the book, I read through the whole book. The opening few pages of the book, when I read it, I said, that's such a deep Torah, I have to share it with someone during Sefiras HaOmer, so I'm going to share it with you. If you'll allow me to begin with something from a secular book, I think we'll be okay. I think we could begin a shir in this way, and we'll still... But you'll see, with eyes to see, there's nothing secular about it. And they begin by describing... Anyone here a soccer fan? Anyone? Anyone plays the stern of a soccer team? They do. Okay. Anyone on the soccer team? Yes? Okay. So you'll tell me if this is true and if you relate to it. They say, imagine it's a World Cup championship soccer match. And the game is tied. And now you have a chance, a penalty kick. I don't like sports mashalim, by the way. I feel like I have to say that. But sometimes the sports mashal is the best way to go. So they say, imagine, it's a championship soccer game. You have a penalty kick at the end of the game. Picture yourself in one of these crazy, soccer stadiums somewhere around the world. 100,000 plus fans screaming, chanting your name. You have an opportunity to win the game for your team, for your country. And the odds are totally, totally in your favor. What percentage of penalty kicks do you think people score on? What would you guess? Throw out a number. You have a big goal. The goal is pretty big. It's only 12 yards away. It's about 8 yards across. It's 8 feet high. It's pretty big. Most of the time people score 75% of penalty kicks. 75, no, what'd you say? 10%, okay. You've never seen soccer before, it's okay. 75% of penalty kicks actually convert, actually score a goal. Okay, so the odds are totally in your favor. You're going to be a hero. Your country is going to put you on cereal boxes. It's going to be tremendous. And if you think about it, we're talking about, again, world-class soccer players. They kick the ball 80 miles an hour. The goal itself is fairly large. The goalie has to anticipate which way you're going to kick, because by the time the ball rockets off your foot at 80 miles an hour, it's way too late to start figuring out, which direction should I jump. So the goalie basically, it's a mind game. The goalie has to guess which way you're going to kick the ball. If you go straight for the corner, like top right, top left corner, it's basically impossible. If you hit it perfectly, it's basically impossible for the goalie to stop you. But the truth is, if you go exactly for the corner and you're off a little bit, you hit the post, right? And then it's a terrible source of busha. So you're cheshbening this out, you're calculating, you're standing there. Again, you have an opportunity to be a hero. And you're trying to figure it out, and the goalie's trying to guess as well. Most soccer players kick with which foot? Take a guess, the right foot. Which means that going to which side would be your strong side? Kicking towards the left. So you're probably going to go to the left, but the goalie knows that you kick with your right foot. So the goalie's trying to figure out, which direction should I jump? And the second you wind up to kick, the goalie has to jump in one direction. So you're trying to figure out, which way should I go? Should I go to the right? Should I go to the left? Most of the time, a right-footed kicker will go to the left corner, majority of the time. And that's why the goalie will jump 57% of the time, will jump to the kicker's left. Only 41% of the time will he jump to the other side. And again, there's this mind game that's taking place. So they describe in the book, they start to describe, again, you're thinking, you're deciding what to do. All of a sudden, this idea pops in your head. What if I kick straight up the middle? That was the title of today's shiur. It probably made no sense if anyone saw the poster. Kick up the middle. What if I decide to kick the ball straight to where the goalie is standing in the middle of the goal? Now, why on earth would I do that? Why would I do that? So they say, well, the truth is, percentage-wise, you actually have a 7% better chance of scoring kicking straight up the middle than any other spot in the goal. That's what statistics show. Now, what's the danger of kicking up the middle? What's the danger? The danger of kicking up the middle is the greatest fear that this soccer player has, which he probably won't admit. And what's that fear? The fear is, what if the goalie doesn't jump? The goalie's going to jump because the goalie figures I'm going for one of the sides. The goalie will take his chances. What happens if I kick straight up the middle and the goalie does something that he only does about 2% of the time, which is he doesn't abandon his spot in the middle of the goal. And I kick the ball right at him and the game's over. And I lost it for my country and for my team. And people say, why on earth did he kick it right at the goalie? So probably a soccer player who's interested in not looking like a total fool is going to aim for one of the corners. Even though percentage-wise, the best shot he has is going straight up the middle. So I want to read you a quote from the book as they describe this moment. There's a third and important reason Why more kickers don't aim center, especially in a high-stakes setting like the World Cup. But no soccer player in his right mind would ever admit it.
What is that?
The fear of shame. Imagine again you are the player about to take the penalty kick. At this most turbulent moment, what is your true incentive? That's the question. This is a very deep Torah. What is your true incentive? What do you want? You have an opportunity now. What do you want?
Well, what should you want?
If you're really a team player, you know what you should want more than anything else? That your team wins. That's all you care about. You want your team to, you don't care if it's going to be a personal fame, you're going to get a large bonus, you know, from the organization, or your name again is going to be on a billboard or on a cereal box. All you care about is that your team wins the championship. That your people, that your nation wins the championship. But is winning the game your truest incentive? Picture yourself standing over the ball. You have just mentally committed to aiming for the center, but wait a minute, what if the goalkeeper doesn't dive? What if for some reason he stays at home and you kick the ball straight into his gut and he saves his country without even having to budge? So you reconsider. You think about going the traditional route toward a corner. If the keeper does guess correctly and stop the ball, well, you've made a valiant effort, even if it was bested by a more valiant one. No, you won't become a hero, but nor will you have to flee the country. If you follow this selfish incentive, protecting your own reputation, by not doing something potentially foolish, you are more likely to kick towards the corner. And here's how the paragraph concludes. If you follow the communal incentive, if you're a person who's really interested in the tzibur, that's my paraphrase, it's not in the book, trying to win the game for your nation, even though you risk looking personally foolish, if you're a communal person, you will kick towards the center. Sometimes in life, going straight up the middle is the boldest move of all. And that's how it ends. And I think for many of us, if we stop and think about this, this is a tremendous opportunity to make a cheshbon nefesh in our avodas Hashem. When I see myself as a Jew who wants to be successful as a Jew in my relationship with Hashem, my relationship with others, but what's it really about? Is it about Hashem? Is it about the Jewish people? Is it about bringing Geula forward, advancing the cause of Mashiach? Or is there a part of us that feels that, you know what, this is really about me? And it's about what makes me feel good. It's about how I earn a big portion of Olam Haba. And how people say, wow, he, she, such a great Jew, such an inspiring person, does so much, right? Such a role model. But again, ask yourself, what's the real motivation? Are you following, like he says, the selfish incentive? Or are you following, even at great risk, Mesiras Nefesh, risking, you know, the shame of oneself, to follow the communal incentive? And that's what I want to talk about today. Because that's what Sfiras HaOmer is entirely about. Sfiras HaOmer is about a time when Jews start to focus outward. And we start to think in terms of tzibur. Instead of thinking as yechidim, what would be good for me? What would be best for my personal connection to Hashem? What would be best for my, you know, personal success in this world? Before you come to Sfiras HaOmer, we have to go back to Pesach. Because we're in those days between Pesach and Shavuos, we have to understand how Sfiras HaOmer fits in to the feeling that we're supposed to have when we walk out of Pesach. Pesach, of course, is the Zman of Geula, Zman Chirusenu. And there's a lot of reasons why Klal Yisrael were Zochet to Geula. So many reasons that you almost wonder, what does it mean they're on the 49th level of Tumah? They sound very righteous. They didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their clothing, and they were Gadar Ba'arayos, they were very moral, they guarded themselves in that way in Mitzrayim. And Chazal have a whole list of things that Jews were so great about in Mitzrayim. Again, you wonder, what does it mean when it says that they were on the verge of self-destruction in Mitzrayim? That's a separate question for another time. But there's one Maimer Chazal. It's a Medrash, Psikta de Rav Kahana, a lesser-known Medrash, that says that, I'll tell you, the Medrash says, well, let me tell you what the real reason Klal Yisrael got out of Mitzrayim was. What was it that really turned the tide? Says the Medrash, Psikta de Rav Kahana, Parsha Yud Daled. It was the Achdus that the Jews showed to one another. It was the fact that every Jew had an impossible amount of demands that power had placed upon him, or upon her. There was a personal obligation on a daily basis to fulfill a certain quota. Who has time to think about someone else? Who has time to be busy with someone else's sorrow when everyone's suffering? And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked down, and he saw in the language of the Medrash that the Jews were lending shoulders to one another, that they were supporting one another, they were carrying one another through that impossibly difficult time. And Paro knew that. Paro was very much focused on causing Jews to become self-centered, to become entirely self-centered. That's why when Paro introduces his plot against the Jews, how does he introduce it? Hava nishakma lo. Let's plot against lo, lashon yachid. Explains the Medrash, and many of the Mefarshim. Hava nishakma lo means let's cause Klal Yisrael, who are the ultimate, as we'll see, of unity, the ultimate expression of unity in this world, let's find a way to rip them apart. So that it's no longer this cohesive unit, but rather it's every man for himself, each person trying to just survive another day in Mitzrayim. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down from Shemayim, says the Medrash, and sees a unified Klal Yisrael, and Hashem says, ah, that's it. That's what I'm looking for. The names, they didn't change their clothing. V'chulu, v'chulu. We can give a million examples that Chazal collect different places to show the milos, the greatness of Klal Yisrael. But says the Medrash, P'sikta Rav Kahana, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked down and saw Jews still cared about one another, despite, again, the weight of their own troubles and their own difficulties. And Hashem said, that's going to be the cause for the Gula. And that's what Pesach reflects. Let's talk about the Karban Pesach for a moment. The Karban Pesach reflects this awesome unity. Everything about it, all of the halachos, the details of halachos of Karban Pesach. For example, Pesachim Tzadi Aleph Amar Aleph. The Gemara discusses, the Mishnah discusses, are you allowed to have a Karban Pesach by yourself? Let's say you decide, you know, you like to eat, you think you can finish off the whole animal by yourself. It was commonplace that people would get together, families would even get together. You have to register for the Karban Pesach, Thid B'Chabura. Let's say you decided you wanted to eat by yourself. There's a discussion in the Gemara. Does that fit in with Pesach? That a Jew would bring his own Karban Pesach? Does that fit the theme of why we were zochet to Geula? What about Chametz? The Pasuk says in Chumash, you're not allowed to shech the Karban Pesach until you remove all Chametz from the home. So what's the halacha? The halacha is that every single member of the Chabura has to get rid of his or her Chametz before you shech the Karban Pesach. Why? Because we're in this together. It's a team effort. When we sit down to actually eat the Karban Pesach, let's say we teamed up, we decided to share this animal for very practical financial reasons to make sure we finish all the meat, we calculate it, we figure exactly who's going to be part of our team, but then we sit down and we decide, you know what, I don't really want to eat with this person, I'd like to have a private Karban Pesach, you know, eating with my family, so I decide to put up a mechitza. And this family will sit on one side of the mechitza, and this family will sit on the other side of the mechitza. This chevra over here, and this chevra over there. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Karban Pesach, doesn't work. If there's a mechitza separating the members of the chabura, it doesn't work. Why? Because again, everything about Pesach demands that Jews work together. That was the ticket to Geula. And that's why Power works so hard, again, to turn Jews against one another. The Tolna Rebbe says, what was the plot? What was the idea of using Jewish Mialdos to dafka kill the Jewish babies? Because that was Paro's plan. How can I turn one Jew against another Jew? And therefore on Pesach, we dafka work to focus on the Tzibur. It's all about the Tzibur. How can I think about the nation? How can I think about Klal Yisrael? There's a beautiful story. I think I've shared it in the past. After the Six-Day War, there was a lot of discussion of whether or not we could actually bring Karbanos Bizman Hazeh. Able to bring a carbon today. So say, bring a carbon today. There's no Beis HaMikdash. But the Rambam writes in Hilchos Beis HaBachira, you don't need a Beis HaMikdash to bring carbonos. You don't need a Beis HaMikdash. What about the fact that people are Tameh? We don't have the Parah Aduma ashes to purify ourselves. You're allowed to bring certain carbonos as long as the majority of the people are in a state of Tumah. And we allow the Tumah to be pushed aside by the need to bring that carbon. So many great rabbis, many great poskim, people were discussing, can we bring carbonos today? After the Six-Day War, we had an opportunity. Seemingly, we could have gone up to Har HaBayis and offered carbonos. And there's a lot of technical issues that different poskim raised at the time, impediments to bringing the Karban Pesach. They came to the Beis Yisrael, the Ger Rebbe, and they asked the Ger Rebbe, what do you thought about this? Is it possible to bring the Karban Pesach with Zman Hazeh? And the Ger Rebbe just stood there and he was shaking his head. And he said, even if we could get around all of the other halachic issues, but one of the main things that we're relying upon is the fact that what? That tumah, that the tumah that the people had, tamei meis, they didn't again have para duma ashes to purify themselves. Tumah is hutra b'tzibur. Tumah is dechuya b'tzibur. Tumah is pushed aside by a need of a community. And the Ger Rebbe said, I'm sorry to say, but when I look at Klal Yisrael today, I don't see a community. I don't see a tzibur. We have to be a tzibur. Tzibur is not just a nice idea. We all happen to be Jewish, and therefore automatically we're called a tzibur. The Ger Rebbe says a tzibur requires a certain connection to one another. And again, that's what the Medrash says was the ticket to getting Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And Paro knew it, and he worked so hard to pull us apart. So when we reflect on the days of Sfiras HaOmer coming again, right after the Yom Tov of Pesach, at Zman Chayruseinu, again, we have to understand where we're coming from when we leave Pesach. Karban Pesach, that's not for us. But a Seder we all had. I hope everyone is zocha to a Seder or two. Those of us who spend Pesach in Chutz Laretz. What's the highlight of the night? What's the mitzvah of the night? It's a night of many mitzvahs. But certainly one of the things that we focus on the Seder night is the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Magid, it makes up the bulk of the time spent at the Seder. I'm telling the story, Chayav Adam Liras Es Atzmo, to try to get into it, to feel the story, to go Paschal Begnuas, Messiah B'Shrach, to go through the experience of leaving Mitzrayim. How does Magid begin? How do we begin the mitzvah of Sipur Yesias Mitzrayim? Halach Ma'anya. And what do we say in Halach Ma'anya? Kol Dichvin Yesev Yecho. Anyone who needs something, come eat by us. Kol Ditzrich Yesev Yefsa. In other words, what are we saying? How do we begin the main mitzvah of the night, Sipur Yesias Mitzrayim? We say, what can I do for somebody else? What can I do for somebody else? Who needs food? Who needs anything? Come, join us. So many Svarim explain, Rav Soloveitchik had this idea. Other Svarim explain, why is it that this is an integral part of the night? So the Svarim explain, because if it's a night of freedom, a free person, right, presumably has the ability to help others. So an expression of our royalty on this night is our claim. Again, this answers the question, why are we inviting people with our door closed? Because we're not really inviting people right now. We're just expressing the fact that we're free, and we're like the royal class, and we could, in theory, invite people. We can now afford to invite people, unlike the times of Mitzrayim, we were so broken and poor, but it's much deeper than that. What are we saying when we invite people? Kol dichvin yesev v'yecho. Kol ditzrich yesev v'yefsach. What are we saying? We're saying that we begin the Haggadah by saying, we got it. We understood what it meant to leave Mitzrayim. We left Mitzrayim because we were focused on others. And therefore, if we want to relive that experience, which is what the Maggid is about, telling the story is about, we declare very openly, we are focused on other people. What can I do for somebody else? That's what it means to get Pesach. That's what it means to understand what the Cheiros of Pesach was about. It's very interesting. One of the strangest things of all, throughout Jewish history, certainly, again, maybe some of you have studied this in Jewish history classes, a lot of literature written about it. Blood libels is a very strange thing. Such a strange idea. It's because why is it so strange? Because it's so not true. We never did that once. It's not like there actually was a chevra of Jews who used to bake Christian blood into their matzahs. It never happened once in Jewish history. It's such a repulsive idea. It's so far out from anything that Jews stand for or believe. And yet, our enemies made up these lies about us on so many occasions, and often it was centered around Pesach for some strange reason. And it was believed. And Jews were killed because of these crazy claims that were so far-fetched. At least say something about us that could sort of be true. How did they rationalize? How did it come to be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed blood libels to take off? Rahman al-Tzan against the Jewish people. This is a question that Rav Elchanan Wasserman raises in his Kovetz Ma'amarim. He has a mimer called Maisa Avo Simul Abanim. And he's trying to understand, how does this fit in to the rest of Jewish history? And he says a very sharp thing. And Rav Elchanan was a very sharp person. Rav Elchanan said, why is it that blood libels became accepted? And again, why is it dafka around Pesach that this always comes up? Because what's the root? Where does this come from? If the nations of the world say something about us, we need to think about it. Now, even if it's outlandish, even if it's a crazy claim like a blood libel, where does it come from? How did we get to Mitzrayim in the first place? So of course, we all know Mechiras Yosef is where it begins. If you want to really trace Mitzrayim back to its origin, it starts with Mechiras Yosef. It starts with brothers turning against fellow brothers. It's taking a coat and dipping it in blood and creating a whole lie, a blood libel of sorts. Says Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Mida Keneged Mida. Mida Keneged Mida. Because of this lie, because of the sale by a Jew, of a fellow Jew, we sold each other out. So unfortunately, Mida Keneged Mida, that crime hangs over us throughout all the generations. In such a crazy way. In a way that's totally irrational, totally illogical. And yet the nations of the world buy into it. They buy into such an idea. Because again, it's dafka on Pesach of all times that we're trying to mitakin Mechiras Yosef. We're trying to mitakin this idea that one Jew could go so far as to sell another Jew when a Jew should feel so deeply connected to another Jew. There's so many halachos of Pesach. Pick up a Mishnah Berurah, pick up an English, you know, Hilchos Pesach manual, and you'll see pages and pages, so many things, so many concerns, so many considerations. What's the first halacha in the Shulchan Aruch when it talks about Hilchos Pesach? What's the first thing you need to think about? Getting ready for Pesach. What's the first thing you need to think about? You know what it says? Mos chitim. How am I going to make sure that someone else has money, right? Collect tzedakah money, so that other people will have matzah, that other people have dalad kosos, that other people can make a seder. What do you mean? I have so many responses. I don't have time to think about anyone else right now. Do you know what I need to do to prepare my home for Pesach? That it should be perfectly kosher. So many obligations, so many responsibilities, and yet the first halacha, before you enter into that world of Hilchos Pesach, the Shulchan Aruch tells you, the first thing you need to know is Mos Chitim. How can I help someone else? The first thing to see for Yesias Mitzrayim, called Dichvin Yesei Ve'yechol, because that is the key to Geula. When Jews stop thinking only about themselves. There's an amazing Gemara in Sanhedrin, Sadi Zayin Amad Aleph. The Gemara says, Ein Ben David Ba, Achetichla pruta minakis. Strange Gemara. The Gemara says, again, Gemara in Sanhedrin, David the Melech's not going to come, in other words, Mashiach's not going to come, until Achetichla pruta minakis, until there's not even a penny left in your wallet. What does that mean? I had a financial crisis. What exactly does that mean? That's the ticket to Mashiach? Very strange Gemara. Hard to understand. Different approaches have been offered. But I saw from the Yismach Moshe a beautiful explanation. Yismach Moshe says, what does it mean that Geula can't come until Achetichla pruta min akis? He says pruta is a lashon of prat. Prat means what? Prat means the individual as opposed to the klal, the tzibur. Mashiach can't come until we get out of our pocket, meaning our comfort zone, that world of pruta, that world of prat, that world of it's about me. Mashiach can't come. Why? Because the same way that the Geula from Mitzrayim, which was the root of all Gaulis and the root of all Geula, was about Jews looking out for one another, so too, Ein Ben David Ba, David HaMelech can't come, until what? Until there's not a single prut, there's not a single bit of pratius, of self-centeredness left in our pocket. That's the only way that Mashiach can come. You know, sometimes we do chesed, we like doing chesed sometimes, but there's a part of us that still asks, a little bit, what does this do for me? What does this do for me? I saw once, I think it was from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, I don't remember where I saw this. I saw once in a sefer, why is it that Jews have a prohibition against lending money on interest? You know why? Because Hashem is trying to train you. Sometimes you just do for another Jew because it's another Jew. You don't have to always get like a little something in return. A small interest fee. A small interest, that's all I'm asking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. Don't do it for anything that you get out of it. Just do it because you care about another Jew. Actually, tichla prutam in a kiss. That there's nothing, you walk away with nothing in your pocket. It's totally for the other person. A total self-sacrifice. That is the geula of Lasilavo. That's the geula of Pesach. And with that, now we can come to Sfiras HaOmer. I want to suggest, what was it that made Sfiras HaOmer's, what made the death of Talmidei Rabbi Akiva so tragic? How did this period become such a sad time? So everyone knows the Gemara. It's not a chiddush. Everyone knows the Gemara in Yevamos, Samach Beis Amud Beis, Shelo Nagu Kavod Zeh LaZeh. They didn't have proper respect for one another. They weren't nice to each other in the Beis Medrash. And all of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, these great Talmidei Chachamim, they all died in this horrible, horrible death, a horrible plague, which the Gemara says took place between when? Between Pesach and Shavuos. Why does the Gemara emphasize that it took place between Pesach and Shavuos? I think it's very obvious. Because this is Dafka the time, more than any other time, where a Jew stops and reflects on the fact, we just left Mitzrayim. Why did we leave Mitzrayim? Because Jews cared about each other. What does the Karban Pesach represent? Jews coming together with Chabura. How does the Pesach Seder begin? With reflecting towards others. How does Hilchos Pesach begin? Mo'os Chitim. How can I help someone else have a good Pesach? How can I prepare for someone else to enjoy the Yom Tov? So Dafka, says the Gemara, between Pesach and Shavuos, the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, whose, of course, famous message was the Klal Gadol B'Torah of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, of respect to one another. That was lost on them. Dafka from such a Rebbe at such a time period. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't overlook that. That Jews don't understand what it means to be a single unit. The essence of Klal Yisrael, one neshama, binding us together. Shelo Nagu Kavod Zeh LaZeh. It reminds me, when you hear those words, Shelo Nagu Kavod Zeh LaZeh, it reminds me of another Maimar Chazal. That Kol Yisrael are Ravim Zelazeh, or Zebazeh. Different Nuschos, different Girsos, exactly what it is. It's Zebazeh, Zelazeh, but it's the same idea. Kol Yisrael are Ravim Zelazeh means what? That means if some other Jew has not yet met whatever is required of them, if someone else hasn't heard Kiddush, I can make Kiddush for them. Why? What does their Kiddush have to do with me? What does their mitzvot have to do with me? Kol Yisrael are Ravim Zelazeh. We're bound together in this awesome way that can't be pulled apart. And therefore, when the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva were lo nagu kavod zeh lazeh, what does it mean? It means they didn't understand the concept of Kol Yisrael Ravim zeh lazeh. Each person in Rabbi Akiva's base measures, or maybe each pair, and that's why the Gemara describes 12,000 pairs, each person with his chavrusa, they sat and they did their thing. But they didn't see it as part of the bigger picture of what Kol Yisrael is about. They didn't see how it fits in to Jews loving one another and connecting to one another. They didn't understand that Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zelazeh, Sifrei Chassidus explain, Arevim is a lesson of sweetness, V'ha'arevna, like we say in Birchas HaTorah, that there should be a sweetness, that a Jew, like the Bava Trebi used to say this idea, that a Jew should be sweet, not just we have a halachic link that binds us together, but there's a bond of love, of sweetness, that exists between one Jew and this other type of Jew. The bonding of the Jewish people, the tzibur of Kol Yisrael, is a very different type of tzibur. It's not just that we happen to have similar ideas, so we get together. There's a famous piece Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, in the Pachad Yitzchak on Pesach, in Maimer Mem Aleph, number 41, he contrasts the way that the Torah describes the bond shared by the Egyptians and the bond shared by the Jewish people. Everyone knows, what was the bond that Klal Yisrael shared when they came to Kabbalah Satorah? Vayichan Shem Yisrael Neged Ahar. What does it say? What's the Lashon of Rashi? Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. What does that mean, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad? And how do we contrast it with what the Torah says a few prakim earlier, when it describes the Tzrayim chasing after the Jewish people, and it flips it around? Over there it says, B'Lev Echad Ki Ish Echad. What's the difference? What's the difference between Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, by the Jewish people, versus Mitzrayim B'Lev Echad Ki Ish Echad? Rav Funder says, there's a very obvious difference. I just saw in the Sefer Tzemach David, from the son of the Bnei Yisachar, from the great Hasidic Rebbes of all time, right, it says the exact same var. So again, this idea is coming from many Batei Medrash, and rightfully so, because it's such an essential idea what it means to be a Jew. By Mitzrayim, it's B'Lev Echad Ki Ish Echad. If B'Lev Echad, if we feel the same way, so then Ki Ish Echad, we'll work together, we'll get together. You have an idea, I share that feeling, I share that idea, so let's work together. Ki Ish Echad. By the Jewish people, it's just the opposite. It's Ki Ish Echad, we're essentially one person. We are one people in the deepest of ways. And therefore what? And therefore, of course, we have to come to B'Lev Echad. But it's not just that if we happen to have similar ideas and we happen to like each other and we get along, so then we'll work together. That's by the Umos Ha'olam, that's by the nations of the world. By the Jews, there's an inherent bond that exists. Ki Ish Echad. We're literally one person, B'Lev Echad. The Baal HaTanya describes in his writings, picture all of the Jewish people, ki'ilu, it's like one body. It's one body, and we each play a different part of the body. Some people are toenails, some people are brain, some people are the heart, the right arm, the left arm, but it's mamish, all one big body. Where did he get this idea from? The Talmud Yerushalmi, Maseches Nedarim, has such an idea. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, gives a mashal, imagine, a person's cutting a steak, and all of a sudden the knife slips from your hand, and you accidentally, this hand accidentally cuts this finger. So what, is this hand going to go and hit back? It'd be the most foolish thing in the world. Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, that's the Jewish people. When I fight with my fellow Jew, if I take revenge against my fellow Jew, I'm taking revenge against myself. Because be'etzem, ki'ish echad, b'lev echad. It's mamish one person. It's one people. And therefore, Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, again, during these days, between Pesach, where we left Mitzrayim, where the Geula took place, because of the Achtus, coming to our Sinai on Shavuos, Vayichan Shem Yisrael, Neged Ahar, with an awesome oneness, to not be sensitive to one another during these days, Befrat, it's unfathomable. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't tolerate it, no matter how great they were in their learning in the Beis Medrash. No matter how great the Rebbe Rabbi Akiva was, he couldn't save them. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't understand how Jews, again, Dafka between Pesach and Atzeres, between Pesach and Shavuos, had failed to internalize this message of what it means to be Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. The Gemara says, Maseches Brachos, that there are two things that really stop us from serving Hashem. What are the two things that get in the way? One is the Yetzer Hara, and one is the fact that we live in exile, that throughout history the Jewish people get kicked around various Golios of our history. The Gemara says, in fact, that Rav Alexandri, when we finished davening Shmon Esrei, used to say, Hashem, this is how we would end Shmon Esrei. Hashem, you know how much I want to serve you, but two things get in the way. Two things get in the way. What gets in the way? My Yetzer Hara in my heart, and the fact that Shibud Malchios, we're still under the nations of the world. There's a beautiful insight there, Rabbi Akiva Eger brings in explaining the pasuk again that we're so familiar with. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ha'har. We know that the Yetzer Hara, the Gemara describes the Yetzer Hara as being compared to a mountain. And therefore, if you want to throw off that burden of the Yetzer Hara that we all feel, and if you want to get out of, I'll add to Rabbi Akiva Eger says, you want to get out of the Golios, because again, those are the two things that stop us from serving Hashem, the Yetzer Hara and Shibud Malchios, being enslaved to foreign nations. So the ticket, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, is what? Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. If you want to be able to fight back against that mountain which is the Yetzer Hara, as the Gemara compares the Yetzer Hara to a mountain, that mountain which is the exiles of Jewish history, why am I calling the exiles of Jewish history a mountain? So, what would be a shir without at least one good gematria? The gematria of the word Har is 205. 205. If you add up the name of the four exiles of Jewish history, Bavel, Madai, Yavan, Edom, I think that's how you do it, you'll check it. If it's either Paras or Madai, I think it's Madai. Paras or Madai is really one exile. Right? It also equals 205, Har, Gematria Har. So says Rabbi Akiva Eger, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, If Vayichan, Kishachon, Lashon Yachid, Vayichan, in the singular, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, when Jews are unified, then we can be Neged Ahar. Then we can get rid of the Yitzhar. Then we can get out from under the burden of Shibud Malchus and emerge to be the nation we're supposed to be. But it takes tremendous sensitivity and it takes tremendous creativity. The Jewish people are known for their creativity in chesed. It's not just that we do a lot of chesed. It's not that just Jews are supposed to be turned outwards. It's that Jews have a creative way, remarkably creative ways of caring about one another. I'll tell you a beautiful story. The Sgalanter Rebbe, let's go back to April 1945. The Sgalanter Rebbe, after the war, different Jews in different camps trying to gather themselves. Of course, the Chorban was you know, unfathomable, the loss of life and the loss of everything, of possessions. People were just at a complete loss. This is April 1945. And it was almost Pesach time. And the Sgalanter Rebbe, being the sensitive person that he was, wanted to make sure that people have matzah for Pesach, a Pesach Seder. Imagine coming out of the Holocaust, being able to feel a little bit Zman Chai Rasenu, despite the terrible Korban, which made it hard to connect and hard to celebrate. But there was a feeling of Chayrus, like perhaps never before experienced in such a real way. And the Sgalanter Rebbe said, I'm going to make sure that there's matzah. And he had one of his gabayim. They were working to get, you know, to get the grains and to prepare the flour and to make sure everything was kosher. And he was able to make quite a bit of matzah, but there was also quite a bit of demand for these matzahs. The Sgalanter Rebbe said, 3 matzahs per person. That's it. For the Seder, that's it. 3 matzahs. That's all I can offer. What happened at that time? Rav Moshe Hager, who was the son of the Sered Vizhnitzer Rebbe, came to the Sgalanter Rebbe. And he said, my father of Baruch Hager told me to come to you. He says that apparently you have matzah. So the Sgalanter Rebbe says, yes, I have matzah. So the son of the Vizhnitzer Rebbe says, my father would like 6 matzahs, please. Sgalanter Rebbe says, 3 matzahs per customer. He says, my father told me 6 matzahs. Father told me 6 matzahs. Father's a big tzaddik. Sered Vizhnitzer Rebbe. I'm not leaving till I've... My father commanded me. I have an obligation. Kibbutz, I'm not leaving until I get 6 matzahs. Sgalanter Rebbe says, I can't afford to give you 6 matzahs. My father says that he knows what he's talking about. He said he's going to argue with you. Don't leave the Sgalanter Rebbe until you have 6 matzahs. Tell him the Vizhnitzer Rebbe we need 6 matzahs. Okay? He pushed. Sgalanter Rebbe said, what can I do? Sarah Vizhnitzer Rebbe is a big tzaddik. I'm going to argue with him. Anyways, in the end, he sent back 6 matzahs with Rav Moshe Hager. Okay. Erev Pesach. Listen to this. Erev Pesach, all of a sudden, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son is coming back, and he sees he's carrying 3 matzahs with him. So the Sgalanter Rebbe says, what's going on? He says, I came to bring back 3 matzahs. He says, I don't get it. You come to me, and you make demands, I need 6 matzahs. I tell you I can only give you 3 matzahs. You fight, and you fight, and you fight. I finally acquiesce, I give you the 6 matzahs, and now you come back Erev Pesach to bring back 3 matzahs. He says, my father's a real chacham. He says, my father knows you, the Sgalanter Rebbe, are overly sensitive to the needs of other people. And my father was sure that you would not save 3 matzahs for yourself. So my father demanded that he was going to take 3 matzahs, guard them for you, and bring them back on Erev Pesach. And he says, tell me, Sgalanter Rebbe, do you have matzahs for yourself on Pesach? Sgalanter Rebbe said, no, I don't. He says, well, now you do. And he gave him those 3 matzahs. He gave him those 3 matzahs. Those are the matzahs that he used that year. To think that 2 Jews would be so many steps ahead with such creativity to be thinking about someone else. But that's what Pesach is. That's what the Geula is. Geula is Jews thinking about one another. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Who thinks like that? Rav David Lalever, one of the great, again, Chassidus Rebbes. One time he was approached by an Ani also, right before Pesach. And this poor Ani was crying. He said, Rebbe, do you have any matzah for me? He says, I have some shmur matzah. I was planning on using it by the Seder. So the Ani says, do you think you can give me some? The Rebbe says, you don't have? So take mine. Take my shmur matzah. And Imamish, right then and there, gave away his matzah. What's he going to do? How's he going to have Pesach? So some of the Talmidim asked him. They said, Rebbe, what are you doing? How could you give away? You don't have matzah for yourself. So the Rebbe says, and if I kept the matzah for myself, would it really be shmur matzah? He quoted the Rashi, the famous Rashi, who shmart them as hamatzos. What does Rashi say? That if a mitzvah comes your way, don't read matzos, read mitzvos. If a mitzvah comes your way, al tach mitzena. Don't pass up the mitzvah. Otherwise what? You make it chametz. The mitzvah becomes chametz. So he says, if I turn down this ani, are my shmur matzos really shmur matzos? Have I absorbed the message of Chazal? To not turn away a mitzvah and turn it into chametz? And again, with such sacrifice. Because what difference does it make if he has a Seder, I have a Seder? So I'm the Lulav Rebbe and he's just some schlepper, some ani? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets the same Seder at the end of the day, whether I make it or he makes it. So why not let someone else be a part of it? That sensitivity, that creativity, to be willing to go above and beyond, to give of yourself, to always be listening in a deep way, not just simplistic chesed, the obvious chesed, but to think, what can I do? What does this person really need from me? What are they really asking of me? Whether they're saying it or not saying it, through their body language. What do they want from me? They tell a story with the Beis Halevi. A woman came to the Beis Halevi, also right before Pesach. The following shaila. She said to the Rav, she said, is it possible to use milk for the Dalit Kosos? Not to use milk. So he says, he starts thinking, he discusses with her, he says, you know, I have something for you. And he goes and he takes out, he reaches into his, tzedakah jar, whatever it was, and he gives her a fairly exorbitant sum of money. And the children of the Beis Halevi say to him after this woman left, why did you give her so much money? She needs money. How much wine is she going to drink? You know, she'll get like the minimum size cup and she'll drink Rove Coast, and she needs one bottle of wine. Why did you give her so much money? And the Beis Halevi said, I'm so disappointed. If she's asking if she can use milk for the Seder, then she clearly doesn't have meat or chicken for the Seder. So she obviously needs a lot more than just a bottle of wine. And the children said, we didn't get that. We missed that. But that's what it means to be creative in Chesed, to listen deeply. What are the needs of Klal Yisrael? What do people want? What are people really asking for? Because that's the essence of what it means to be a Jew. I want to read you a quote found in the Akdama to the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim, of course, from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. There's a beautiful Akdama written by his son, Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin. And he says, my father used to always rebuke me. Rav Yitzchak Volozhiner says, my father, Rav Chaim of Volozhin, would criticize me. Al shirah she'ineni mishtati v'tzara da'achrina. My father says, you're not connected enough to the pain of other people. The Kohaya Deborah Eli told me, he always said to me, Shazak Koha Adam, this is what it's about. It's not about how many blot of Gemara you know. It's not about necessarily how many other mitzvahs. And of course, I'm not Chas V'Shalom in any way taking away to take one thing that Jews value and put it, you know, beyond everything else. But it's pretty interesting that the word Gemilas Chasadim is exactly the gematria as the word Torah, 611. Because what's the whole Torah about? The Gemara in Sota says the Torah begins with Chesed, it ends with Chesed. If you don't have this, he wasn't telling Rav Yitzchak Volozhiner, don't ever learn Torah, stop davening and just do Chesed. But he's saying if you don't have a focus on this, you're missing what it means to be a Jew. You don't understand, like the Baal HaTanya said, we're one body. It's one thing. Shezek kol ha'adam lo la'atzmo nivra. A person's not created just to live for himself. Rak laho la'achrini. What can I do for others? Kol ditzrich yesev yefsach. What can I do for you? Kechol asher yimsa b'kocho lasos. Rav Chaim Volozhiner would constantly tell his son, what are you doing for others? Whatever you have within your ability to do for others, that's what you need to do. Because what becomes of a Jew? What happens to a Jew who's totally self-centered? That Jew becomes such a threat to Klal Yisrael's existence. It's unbelievable. There's an amazing thing that takes place, or took place once upon a time in the Beis HaMikdash. On Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol was coming out of Kodesh Kadashim, he would stop and he would say a short tefillah. One of the things that he mentions is that, you imagine, a few moments, right after being in Kodesh Kadashim, on his way out to make a few requests, what better time to ask Hashem for big things? What is he daven for? One of the things that he davens for is that, Hashem, you know, there's going to be someone who's traveling Alil Regel. He's traveling back and forth from Yerushalayim. And it might start to rain. This person doesn't want to get wet. So he's going to daven to Hashem, please make it stop raining. Please make it stop raining. Kohen Gadol davens in Yom Kippur, Hashem, don't listen to that person's tefillah. Now normally in the Sfarim, they explain this tefillah of the Kohen Gadol as being so significant because it teaches us the power of tefillah. Here this guy is just walking on the road and he turns to Hashem, you know Hashem, the rain's really bothering me. It takes nothing, when a Jew talks to Hashem, it takes nothing less than a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur to stop that tefillah from being answered. That's normally how they explain, you know, this idea of the Kohen Gadol responding to this person on the road's tefillah. But I heard from my good friend Rav Shai Schechter, beautiful, beautiful, about a year ago, he told me the following insight. He said, no, I'll tell you a different shot. Why is the Kohen Gadol, this is what you need to daven for, that this guy, he has a little tefillah, it shouldn't rain on his head. Why? This is what the Kohen Gadol needs to speak about on Yom Kippur? So Rav Schechter said, yeah, that's exactly what a Kohen Gadol needs to speak about on Yom Kippur. Because think about it. When this guy says, the rain is bothering me, does he not realize how many Jews are dependent upon that rain? Does he not realize that Klal Yisrael need that rain to survive? And he's become so self-absorbed that what? That he says, you know, Hashem, the rain's bothering me. As if the rain has no purpose. As if it's not helping countless people. A person who's so self-absorbed, that's an emergency on Yom Kippur. That's nothing less than the Yom Kippur, than the Kohen Gadol coming out of Kodesh Kadashim on Yom Kippur. He says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't listen to that person. And I have to take this up with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Can there be a Jew in Klal Yisrael who's lost himself so much that he's so focused on himself that he doesn't realize how he fits into the big picture? These days, during Sfiras HaOmer, it's the minhag of Klal Yisrael to learn Pirkei Avos. I want to just quote a Mishnah from this coming Shabbos, this Pirkei Avos, the third parak of Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion Omer, Shnayim Sheyoshin Ve'ein Beneim Divrei Torah. If two people sit together and they're not studying Torah, it's a terrible thing. Mishnah goes on. It's a terrible thing. Terrible bizarre. But you notice I didn't quote that part of the Mishnah. I stopped right where I stopped. Shnayim Sheyoshin Ve'ein Beneim Divrei Torah. Says the Kotzker Rebbe. Shnayim Sheyoshin. If two Jews sit together, Ve'ein Beneim, comma, and there's nothing between them. There's nothing that separates them. Divrei Torah. That is Divrei Torah. The two Jews can be together and be focused on one another. That the Skolana Rebbe is focused on everyone else, and the Vizhitzer Rebbe is focused on the Skolana Rebbe. That the Beis HaLevi is able to listen to the woman's request for whether or not you can use milk for the Dalet Kosos and understand that she has a much bigger issue. Shnayim Sheyoshin, when two Jews come together and they can sit ba'achtus, ve'ein be'nam, there's nothing stopping them from working together. That is Divrei Torah. That's the most beautiful Divrei Torah in the world. And therefore, during these days, as we approach Lag Ba'Omer, because as we know, even though the Gemara says that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died between Pesach and Shavuos, everyone knows, it's an accepted Jewish tradition, that their deaths actually stopped on Lag Ba'Omer. Who stopped the deaths? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, it's his day, Lag Ba'Omer. Why? Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was all about loving one's fellow Jew. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who always tells us, "B'chavivusa talia milsa," that everything depends on the achdus, the love. I want to read you a short passage. I know our time is just about up, but I want to read you a short passage from the Zohar HaKadosh, the work of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's quoted by the Bnei Yisachar in his Agra de Pirka, in Os Reish Mem Tes. I want to read you the translation here, a Hebrew translation of this passage in the Zohar. Kishabo lefnei Rabbi Shimon. You'll understand why in Lag Ba'Omer, of course, they stopped dying. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's message is the greatest tikkun. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva who got Rabbi Akiva's message. When they came, when the Talmidim came before Rabbi Shimon, he'd say to them, "Hichansu banim kedoshim, come, my holy sons. Hichansu ahuvei hamelech, come, the ones who are beloved by the king. Come and sit by me, ahuvi, right? Ahuvai, my beloved ones. Hichansu ahuvim elu be'elu, those who love one another. Come, you're welcome to be part of our chabura to learn the deepest secrets of the Torah." Kol achaverim b'yamav Rabbi Shimon, avas nefesh v'ruach chayu b'neim. The chevra of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai were Jews who loved each other like no Jews in history. V'lachein b'dorosh Rabbi Shimon sisrei Torah chayu b'gilui. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was zochah to reveal the secrets of the Torah. Because the greatest secret the Jewish people carry within themselves is this bond that they share with one another. It's our best kept secret. And if we can tap into that, that is the ticket to Geula. That's mamish the key to Geula. And I want to just end by saying that now more than ever, I think it's obvious to us, at the end of the longest galus of Jewish history, all the more so we need this more than ever. To think about bonding with one another, to attach to one another, to put an end to silly machlokas when so many people are out to get us, that Klal Yisrael can't. Shnayim Sheyoshin Ve'ein Beineihem. The two Jews can sit together and there's nothing between them. They're just happy with each other. They don't always have to be fighting about what they disagree with. Ein Beinam, there's nothing that's keeping them apart. Divrei Torah, that is Divrei Torah. When Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed, and he gathers his children together, he says, "Let me tell you about the end of days." He wants to reveal Mashiach, yeah? And Rashi says that all of a sudden he forgot. What does the Pasuk say? Yaakov says to his children, "Hey, asvu va'agidu lachem, es asher yikra eschem ba'achas yamim." Let's get together. Gather together, and I'll tell you about the end of days. But you know what the tzaddikim explain? The chassidim explain, Yaakov was telling them the secret to the end of days. Hey, asvu, get together. V'agid alachem. It's a shir. Yikra eschem b'achas yamim. If you get together, that will be achas yamim. That's Mashiach. That's what it's about. V'haya ekev tishma'un. We're in a period called the ikvus of the Mashiach, the end of time, the final steps before Mashiach. The pasuk says, V'haya ekev tishma'un. If only you would listen to the ekev. My brother told me from the Ben Ish Chai in his drashos, how many words are there in the Aseret HaDibros? 172. The gematria of the word Ekev. V'haya Ekev Tishmun. If you would only listen to word number 172. What's the last word of the Aseret HaDibros? What's the last word of the Aseret HaDibros? It says, you shouldn't be jealous of your friend, and rather, you shouldn't covet that which is L'Re'acha. You shouldn't desire that which is L'Re'acha. V'haya Ekev Tishmun, says the Ben Ish Chai. If we would just listen to Ekev, that 172nd word of the Aseret HaDibros, L'Re'echa, V'Avta L'Re'echa Kamocha, V'Avta L'Re'echa, with the Klal Gadol B'Torah, Rabbi Akiva's Klal. So I want to just end, for real, and then I'll let everyone go, because I know everyone needs to go. But I want to just end with a beautiful, beautiful quote from the Tana de Be'alio. I know I ended a few times already, I do it every time, so you're used to it by now. The Tana de Be'alio says, Kach Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. This is Hashem's message to the Jewish people. Banai Ahuvai, Klum Chisarti Davar Shavakesh Mikem. Hashem says, is there anything you can really give me? Do I need anything from you? What do I want from you? Chai, so what do I want? Ma ani mevakesh mikhem? Ha'ein ani mevakesh mikhem ela shetiu ovin zesa v'tiu mechabdin zesa. That's it. Hashem says, that's all I want. That Jews should love one another, says the Medrash, in the name of Eliyahu Navi, and that Jews should mechabed one another, should respect one another. That there should no longer be this illness of lo nagu kavod zebazeh. So Mir Hashem, every single one of us should have the courage to kick that ball up the middle. Think about it. Let's go back to where we started. You're standing there, you have an opportunity, and you have to ask yourself, am I committed to winning it for the team? Or is it about me? Is it my own personal embarrassment that, God forbid, the goalie doesn't leave his place? Hashem should give us the strength that every single one of us should have that courage to kick up the middle. And Mir Hashem will all be zocha to score the biggest goal, the greatest victory, which of course is the Gula Shlema, which we long for from here.